welcome to the Elevated Podcast, based on the best-selling books Elevated and Excavated. I am your co-host and co-author, Virgil Herring, joining me as always, co-host, co-author, Drew Maddox. Drew, how are we doing today, buddy?
Virgil, doing amazingly well. So excited to be with you.
Excellent. Well, it's so great to be with you. Big word today, heroically. And we have heroes, and then there are moments or things that happen that are heroically done. When you think of heroically, what's the first picture that comes to your mind?
Ooh. I mean, the first picture that comes to my mind is two Michael Jordan images. Mm-hmm. One is he comes over to the bench, the famous flu game. Mm-hmm. They put the towel around him, and he's so sick. And you can just see it all over him. And the levels of which he still performed were insanely heroic.
Yeah.
So that's one. The other one is the walk-off, I mean, in 98 in Utah. And just the fact, I mean, you know, we watch all these wonderful performers, but to think that that guy did it at those levels with the highest stakes on the line over and over and over again, I mean, it's just heroic. Yep. And the fact that in that moment when it was time to deliver, you know, he makes the move, he finishes the play, he makes the shot, and he had led up to that moment even making a defensive play, the play before where he got the and one.
Yeah.
I mean, heroes rise when it's time to be heroes.
Yeah.
And that guy, when you asked me what's your first picture, those were the first two pictures that came into my mind at that very moment.
Yeah, I'm always wondering, like, what's your feeling on what would Michael Jordan be doing today in today's rules and how the game is played? You know, it's so much on the perimeter and then the drive and dunk layup so much, so to speak. Would he have more?
Yes.
He would?
And here's why. Here's why. Because the game was so consolidated in terms of spacing principles. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the advanced analytics of shot geographies.
Yeah.
So one, the spacing wasn't there because the skill development of shooting wasn't there. I've answered this question 1,000 times, by the way, because I love this. It's a great question.
Yeah.
So the spacing isn't there because the skill development of shooting isn't there. And then the third component that happened about, I don't know, 7 to 9 years ago was the way that the game was officiated totally shifted in favor of creating more offensive opportunities. So they favored the attacker on the offensive side instead of favoring the attacker on the defensive side. Well, you know, when you think about Jordan playing, you think about the Jordan rules with the Pistons, you think about those games with the Knicks, the grind them out, physical games, that would have been eliminated.
Oh, yeah.
He would have shot 10 more free throws a game. With the way shooting is today, you know, you think about Steve Kerr and John Paxson and B.J. Armstrong and Craig Hodges. All those guys, instead of standing at the 17-foot mark, are now standing at the 22-foot mark. Well, that's 5 more feet of gap control help that is not present on vertical drives that he's making or on isolations at the mid-post. So, yeah, would his skill development in terms of shooting probably would have improved in today's world. Mm-hmm. But his vertical drives, his isolation plays, and free throw play would have taken his points per game at a minimum, Virgil, 8 to 10 points a game.
That's what I was thinking, 8.
Yeah.
So
just on that, that's conservative. So you're already talking about averaging 38, 39 a game. I think he would have surpassed 40.
Wow.
In today's game, with his skill set, his mindset, with the way that they would have surrounded him with the needed spacing and shooting, it would have been lights out. It would have been lights out.
You think anybody could have taught him how to shoot a 3-pointer better?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, he was already proficient.
But it's a great question that people ask, and they're like, he would have dominated even more than what domination was, and he's already, in my opinion, the best to ever play.
Yeah, because, man, he did it on every side of the ball, too.
Oh, man.
And there was like, he was a loose ball getter. I mean, he played the game the way you'd want it to be played.
And there's no load management. I mean, he played every night. You go back and you look at his stats, it's 82 games, 82 games, 82 games. They played all the way through, you know, won 6 championships. So he's playing as far into it. In 92, he's playing on the USA team. It's there was no taking off. Now, here's the other interesting thing that I bet if in today's modern day world too, because here's the other piece to it. He did all of that while really, not, I mean, he was physically fit in terms of like sold out to his weightlifting and conditioning. Mm-hmm. But his diet and taking care of himself, you know, that's debatable. So you hear these guys like Tom Brady, like Russell Wilson or LeBron James that spent over $1 million on taking care of himself. He would have taken care of himself.
Yeah.
Just because the times have changed. You have more knowledge. You have more exposure to things. So I'm telling you, like, the levels that he would have played at in modern-day basketball would have been insane.
Yeah, because the one thing that can't be taken away is his drive, right? So when he was in his peak, he would have done everything that because he did then.
Yes.
They just didn't have the information that we have now.
Yes.
And I think what makes him so heroic is the fact that he played the game, or he practiced the game like he had never won anything. And he played the game as if he's never lost.
Such a key point.
Yeah, he dove after every loose ball. Yeah. He defended the best player on the – if he didn't defend the best player, yeah, he was defending the second best player because Pippen was also a great shutdown guy.
Yeah.
So was Rodman, for that matter. I think that's what makes them so difficult, is that everybody played both sides of the floor.
Good. Oh,
you know, and like now you don't see too many people that play both sides of the floor.
Yeah,
and that's the one of the coolest things is like he practiced like he had never won anything and played like he had never lost.
Yeah,
and that's a cool way to visualize yourself going through life.
Yeah.
Is preparing like you've never won and play like you've never lost.
I love that. Wow. You know, the modern day Warriors are very similar to the Bulls of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Bulls in modern day would have played a lot like the Warriors. Steph Curry taking on the role of Jordan does it differently. I'm not comparing skill set.
Yeah.
I'm just saying what they do to create attention for their team. You have Klay Thompson, great number two that kind of offsets. He's the shutdown defender, but also can give you some production. Draymond is your Robin. He's the instigator. He's the guy you hate to play against, but you want on your team desperately.
Yep.
And then you surround us with shooting all around us, and you get the ball movement similar to in those days, it was the triangle. It's all the same. I really believe if you put the Warriors ownership and GM and Steve Kerr, who once again is a common thread with both of those, in a room, they would tell you they architected and blueprinted this team to very similar modern-day alignment to the 90s Bulls.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't mean to get up on that tangent, but you asked me about it. And so it just gives our listeners a little bit of insight to like making those connections.
Yeah, and the context of what it takes to understand what is done heroically. Very few things are done heroically for the unprepared.
Yeah, so true.
You know, very few things. I mean, other Hail Mary passes, so to speak.
Yeah, but you're not showing up and playing hero on hope.
Yeah, for sure. It's the most prepared people that stand out in the most insane pressure.
Yeah.
And obviously, when I think back to heroically, there is Willis Reed is the first person that I remember.
Yeah.
And when he came back from the Knicks and played with a broken leg and came back and, you know, led the Knicks to essentially their last NBA title. And doing it on a broken leg. That's big. In my sport, Tiger Woods winning the U.S. Open in 2008 with a torn ACL and stress fractures in his leg.
I mean, how do you do that?
I don't even know. Like, the amount of pain that he was in and all of the treatment that he had to go through every night to get ready to play the next day was unbelievable. And on another side of it, a moment that I'll never forget was Carrie Strug, the gymnast that won the gold. She fell. She had one more jump on the pommel horse. And she broke her ankle on the jump before. And then she ran down on that mat with a broken ankle. I don't even know how she did it. And then landed.
Stuck it.
With one leg, essentially. I mean, that's the most heroic of them, in my opinion. Because, one, she's diminutive. She's small. She's not supposed to be. I mean, she's Mighty Mouse, right? She's not supposed to be what we'd think of Tiger Woods or Willis Reed. I mean, Willis Reed's 7 foot tall, and Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods. At that point, very few people ever knew who Carrie Strug was. Now, then she became a household name in 5 seconds. And, like, somebody that you'd be proud of. Because she sacrificed herself for the betterment of others. Others as in her teammates, her country. That's a pretty brave and obviously it's not soldiers, but I mean, it's still, you're representing your country in front of the world and with massive adversity, broken ankle, you go out and you land on a broken ankle doing like a violent motion, stick it, and then get carried off by your team. I mean, just unbelievable. But how do you do that? How can you overcome an injury? Is preparedness.
Yeah.
And so when we're trying to think about less heroicness, like I'm very confident that your kids look at you, Drew, as one of their heroes. But what do you do every day? You show up every day. You're prepared to love, care, nurture, and do everything you need to do for your kids every day. And then when you become their hero, it's not so much in their greatest moments, but in their less than stellar moments. And not only do you lead because you're older, so you've also experienced more negative, so you show the perseverance that's required to overcome bad days. You do that not so much because you're talking about it, but your actions show what you do when things are tough. But then when they're having their bad days, they don't have the experience that you have. Not only can they remember how you carried yourself through difficult moments, and that's easy to mimic and mirror, but then you also can give them the experience of this is how you think when things don't go right. Yeah. And that's more important. That's more day-to-day heroicism than Tiger, Willis Reed, you know, Kerry Strug, and anybody, Michael Jordan, anybody you want to talk about, that's easy to see because it's on TV and it's for everybody to see. And it's something that it's the gladiators,
right.
You know,
they're,
but at the end of the day, we're all gladiators in our own pit. And we have to know that our loved ones are watching. And when you carry yourself and conduct yourself in the proper manner, you become people's beacon of light because they can see that you're able to overcome adversity in which ways that they didn't know that they could, but they know that if you can do it, they can do
it.
That's
right.
And that's one of the pieces that I'd be wanting to encourage people to take in and ingest off of this word, is that most people, when they think of heroic, something that's heroically done, it's on a grand stage at the grandest moment. But like I believe that it's also a demonstration of preparedness.
No doubt.
And if you can prepare yourself, whatever it is that you're doing, just because it only affects one person doesn't make it less heroic than somebody that does something in front of millions.
That's right.
Because it only takes every rock that's thrown in the ocean creates a wave, and that wave creates something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it's tiny, it still was created, and it has an impact, infinitesimally small or gigantically big, it makes an impact on the world. Mm-hmm. And you got to remember that every single thing that you do that pushes outward and affects somebody else, that affecting somebody else then cascades out and that affects them. It's a ripple effect. And that's why they love to use the rock in the ocean. The ripples go outward. And even though it's small, those ripples go a long, long way and touch a lot of things.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd be hoping for people out there that maybe feel like they don't have the arena to be heroic.
Yeah.
And I don't buy that.
Yeah. Gosh, I couldn't have said any better. You know, I was just thinking about as you were speaking, because I wrote in the book about my wife and she's just, I watch what she does every day. She's a hero. I mean, she does it with an effortless approach to life. It's just who she is. It's an outward expression of an inward reality of she's a hero. I mean, she can't help but be that in the lives of our kids, my life, and, you know, everybody she connects with. But, you know, lately we just came off of the holiday. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the first holiday that my grandmother passed away this year. So that was my last living grandparent just passed away. And, you know, it was like it was a big moment, you know, when just kind of like the end of an era of four pillars.
Yeah.
And I think about both my granddads and both my grandmothers that just had tremendous impact on my life. And on Thanksgiving, my mother, we were at my mom's house, and she's the oldest of four sisters. And everybody was at my mom's house, probably 40 plus people gathered. And it's as proud as I've ever been of my mom. As weird as that is to say that you're proud of your mom.
Yeah.
But my mom stepped out of really her character. She's not somebody that wants the spotlight or a center stage, or, you know, really wants to speak in front of a group of people, even though it was her family, she still, you know, she just lovingly acts and serves through just acts of kindness, if mm-hmm. you would. But in this moment, Virgil, she honored my grandmother in a way through words. She had us read, share reflections and stories. She asked me to pray. And it just got me thinking about my mom. You can hear my voice starting to shift in my throat. My mom, just, there hasn't been a day she hasn't heroically showed up in my life.
Yeah.
Like, even as a 46-year-old adult, and just knowing the impact that she's had. And that was just a reminder of watching my mom step into a moment. And she was a hero honoring another hero of ours, which was my grandmother. But I love where you took the conversation, because it's easy to celebrate the heroes on television or those that we feel like are so distant.
Yeah.
But every single day, we are walking through life, and you get to play the hero in the story. Every one of us, everybody listening, you and I talking, our family, our friends, we all get to play the hero in the story. And there is somebody that is dependent today. Even in your bleakest and darkest moments of doubt, there is somebody that is depending on you today to step up and play hero.
Yep.
And I love what you talked about the ripple effect. Because you don't know. It could be, like you said, just, it could seem so small, or it could be gigantic. We don't know.
Yep.
But all you can do is open your eyes, have your ears open, your heart aware to walking around, and who are those opportunities that are out there that you can step into their story and help facilitate by joining them in their journey, that they can now play hero in their own journey as well.
Yeah. Like, to me, I'm strange in the things that draw me into creating service. Like, I'm more apt to want to help somebody, you know, elderly, get their groceries to their car, take their cart from them so they don't have to walk, pay attention to women in the parking lot at night, make sure they can get to their car without anything bad happening. Those little things, even if you don't actually help.
Yeah.
You're keeping an eye out. That's the small ripple.
Yep.
If you watch 1,000 elderly people take their groceries to the car and never have to help one, but the 1,001 is a huge deal. If you've watched a mother or a teenage girl walk from the grocery store, Walmart, the mall, to her car, and not anything ever happened bad, for 1,000 consecutive times, but that 1,001th time that you prevent something terrible from happening, that's the kind of hero stuff that people, because it doesn't stand out until it happens.
Yeah.
But because you're doing the process of being a good citizen, you're doing the process of being a good person, being vigilant to the good from the bad. That's so, like, those are the little things that people can do. That's just my thing. Those are the things that I'm paying attention to. And I'm sure that somebody could say, well, Virgil, why don't you think like this? Or why aren't you more vigilant to that? I don't know. I just feel like there are a lot of atrocities done to the elderly and women that if more people paid attention to them, because it's a lot of times it happens right in front of our face, but we don't pay attention.
Right.
And then another thing is that then when it does happen, people don't know how to react and they freeze. But if you're constantly paying attention, you can actually stop it from getting to the point where you would freeze, because you can cut it off at the pass, so to speak. How does that happen? Because you're prepared for it.
Right.
So, you know, at the end of the day, one of the first P's in process is preparation. Preparation for anything requires first the thought, then being able to accumulate enough information that gives you action. So when you take action, that's really one of the most important pieces to anything and being successful. There are a ton of people with great ideas that sat on them. They were afraid to fail, or they felt like they didn't have the resources, and that's short-sighted, and you know, maybe they didn't have the leadership that they needed to carry it out. But at the end of the day, all we have to do, if we could just figure out a way to be a better citizen to the other people in the world, the people less fortunate, less strong, less capable, those are the little things that go so long. And even though they don't grab the headlines in life, the ultimate headline, one of my greatest things, I try to live my life toward this. This comes from a great golfer and great teacher named Jackie Burke. You know that you've lived a great life and you've been a hero if you can fill up a church when you die. And you see, if you live your life in that manner where you're vigilant to others' needs and people's weakness and what have you, I can promise you one thing, you'll have a full church.
Yeah.
And it was one of my funny stories about people that know sports, right? So Jackie Burke was asked to comment on his particular statement that he made years ago on Arnold Palmer's death. And they said, well, if you ever want to know how important Arnold Palmer was, he didn't fill up one church, he filled up three. Mm. His funeral and viewing and wake was so gigantic that they had to fill up two other churches and do live streaming from the church that his body was sitting at for the service.
Wow.
Because they couldn't fit that many thousands of people to see Arnold Palmer.
Wow.
But really, Arnold Palmer didn't do anything that was visibly heroic for many, many years. Except if you ever met him, you recognize something. Mm-hmm. He had this magnetic way. When he shook your hand, he looked you square in the eyeballs. And for some bizarre reason, his gift was he and you had this weird connection that he never forgot you either. That was his gift. His gift was he's able to connect with people and make you feel like, wow, I got to know Arnold Palmer. And he impacted people's lives so profoundly because of who he was, not because he was a great golfer. And that's the thing that's so bizarre. I mean, there's plenty of things that you can look back on Arnold Palmer's life and wonder about, how'd that shake out? But if there's one thing you can't question, is his impact on others.
Yeah.
And all the things that he did for hospitals and for children care in hospitals. I mean, he and Jack Nicklaus combined have done so much for people like that. And so those two things right there, when you think of Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer, you think of great golfing champions. But their largest impact was not through golf, but through their service to others.
Wow.
And with what they did through hospitals, yes, they had the money to help, right? But how they went about it, anybody can do.
Yeah, that's right.
Anybody can do that. And as I'm sure you know, Drew, it's great to achieve things. Yeah. It's awesome to achieve things. But there is nothing like helping others achieve things.
That's right. Well, and what you're describing is what we have spent all of Elevated writing a book, Excavated writing a book, the podcast Elevated, now into Excavated. What we're trying to present to people is what you just summed up in the last little bit of this segment, which is there is a big difference between trying to build your resume versus really building the elements of your eulogy. That's what you described. There's a big difference between fulfillment and achievement.
Yep.
There's a big difference between meeting a goal or living out your purpose. All of those other things are wonderful. Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer used their platform, used their network, used all that they had done on the other side of the ledger to push into this higher purpose, this more fulfilling life that essentially built out the eulogy elements that they spoke to that filled up three churches.
Yep.
So that's what we're trying to encourage people is what is your approach? I will tell you, you've won a state championship. I've won a state championship. That trophy was placed in our hands and it was great. I mean, we celebrated, it was great. But I mean, honestly, when you ask me about 2011 and 12 and 2012 and 13, when we went back to back, the goal ball seems so insignificant. It would be so far down the list of things I would tell you about that team, those players, those families, those moments, those experiences, and the way my life was forever changed.
Yeah.
The actual trophy itself is symbolic of so much more than just winning a championship. it sums up all of these other beautiful elements that push me in my path and in my journey of becoming more true of who I was created to be. Now, did we win it? Yes. Twice we won it. All the other years, we lost the last game of the year. Did that cheapen or lessen any of those things? No, because we still were learning how to live life in a more fulfilling and joyful way.
Yeah.
That what we did or what we didn't do didn't take away from what we learned and who we were being created to be.
Wow. I have never thought about a trophy being a symbol of the whole story like you just presented it. But that's really true. Wow.
Well, because we go to the trophy case and I don't see, oh, man, you finished first place. Y'all must have won a lot of games or you scored a lot of points.
Mm-hmm.
No. Let me tell you about Craig Bradshaw. Let me tell you about the sacrifice his family made to be on this team. Let me tell you about Jalen Lindsey and Thomas Richard. You want to hear the story of incredible hero? Let me tell you about Tracy Bonds and Braxton Bonds. Let me tell you about Jake Allsmiller, what he was walking through, Braxton Blackwell Key.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you about these kids and their stories and what we did together. I got chills on my arm even saying their names.
Yeah.
Because each one of those people played heroes in my life of pushing me further down my path and in my journey.
I agree. I'm going to end on this because this is fresh, this is big, and it's not necessarily, I'm not like the biggest fan of this team, but what is happening, I really wish people would pay close attention to. Auburn football has been cartwheeled. They fired their coach midway through the season. And they have an interim coach who is a former star player, Cadillac Williams. This guy has literally changed the culture of the football team. There isn't one person on that team. I believe this to be wholeheartedly true. I guarantee you, ask every boy on that Auburn football team, they don't want Urban Meyer coming in there.
Yeah.
They don't want Hugh Freeze coming in there. They want Cadillac. But because Cadillac is young and he's not been the head coach for, you know, a ball but for five games, they don't feel like the program – he's not good enough for the program.
Right.
But I don't know who's not watching, but somebody's going to pick up Cadillac Williams, and that's the kind of guy. He's a hero. You listen to the story that he just put out about he's not even hurt that Auburn's not looking at him. All he's thinking about is what you just said. What we've done here, since I've been the head coach, I've brought 12 kids to Christ, seven kids out of trouble and into a different realm. Everybody's grades are up and every teacher's coming to me saying, you have changed the entire landscape, not of how they play football, but how they show up and how they show up in class. How can they not think that he's not the right guy?
Yeah.
I mean, he went to school there too and was a star.
Yeah.
And you're going to look to bring in maybe one of the five filthiest coaches to come in and run your program, and only because another filthy coach on his resume, doesn't mean he's not a great person, but like you're looking at the wrong places.
Correct.
To build your program.
Yes.
Is Hugh Freeze a great football coach? I'm 100% sure that he is. And did he maybe get caught doing something that every single other team does? Probably. Urban Meyer, I'm not so sure. I think there's a little bit more of a layer of film that you have to wipe off when you're thinking about Urban Meyer. But at the end of the day, he's a great football coach. He's won a lot of national championships. And this is the sign, folks. This is a sign that the result is more important than the process.
Yeah.
It is more important for Auburn to overcome Nick Saban in Alabama than it is for them to have a program that churns out awesome men and women. Yeah. But I mean, and that's why we have written these books, is like, we have to do our part to make the ripple, to help people change the mindset that winning is not everything. The process of winning, to pushing yourself to be as great as you can be, is the thing.
Yes.
And that when it turns out to be victorious, wow, is that awesome. But when it's not a loss or a fail, it is a learn. And you get back in it and do it again. Because if there's one thing we know is that, and I got this also from Coach Bowers, who really did a great job steering me into this thought process. In life, every day we need to learn how to compete.
Yep.
You have to compete. What does that mean? You're going to lose some days, but you're not going to lose. You're going to learn. Man, if you're prepared and you put the time in, you're going to have a bunch of successes. But it's the process that matters, not the result. And I just think the world of how Cadillac Williams, I mean, he showed up in that first game. He's running down the sidelines. It was against Mississippi State, for that matter. That's why I knew so much about it. Wow. We're thumping them. And they're down like 27-3. And then he's over there. He will not let him get down. Mm. I mean, this is going to be their sixth loss in a row. I'm not letting him get down. He's uplifting. They come all the way back. And literally, Mississippi State has to, like, home run luck win it in overtime. And, like, he comes out. This wasn't a loss for us. We learned something.
Wow.
And how he conducts himself. I'm like, man, I want that guy on my team.
Yes.
Because as much as everybody wants a Draymond Green and a Dennis Rodman to disrupt a little bit, there is nothing like somebody that can make you feel like you're unstoppable because of who you are.
That's right.
And, man, he delivers that. And I just think anybody should be – if now that Auburn's definitely chosen not to go with him – I'd be taking that guy like as fast as I could take
him. Such a great point. I mean, it comes down to what's your definition of a hero.
Yeah.
And what elements do you want to spend your life really stepping into who you're becoming?
Yep.
I mean, is it about the win? Is it only about the win? Does the win define you? Is that what your identity is built on? Or is it the elements of what it takes to win? And that's what you and I have. That's why we're kindred spirits in so many ways, because we've never spoke to our teams or those we serve about the achievement. Now, we did with great intensity, coach like crazy on the process and the elements of winning. Mm-hmm. But it never was about the win. It's what it took to win.
Correct.
And that's where the definition of a true hero really lies for me.
100%. Well, you have been listening to the Elevated Podcast. If you're interested in our books, you can find them on Amazon.com. We look forward to seeing you next week as we choose the next chapter in Excavator. Have a wonderful day.